Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to DAVE, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Los Angeles, in caregiver world, and from Manhattan too, and from Australia, from down under, mate. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and a million other platforms. And so our job here is to make sure that you don't burn out, because we know that 30% of you are like dropping because you're not putting your oxygen mask on first. So we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg of the Fount of the Caregiver Space. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And today we're going to be interviewing a wonderful guest, an author of The Divorce Tango, and her name is Cheryl Duffy. And we're going to be talking about the sacrifices that caregivers make. Probably one of the worst sacrifices that they make is it puts so much stress on the marriage that I can't tell you how many caregivers I know that have suffered from caregiving and gotten a divorce. So we're going to talk all about that and her book, The Divorce Tango. And she's joining us all the way from Australia. So before we get started, I just want to take this moment and thank my last week's guest, Dr. Antoine Chevalier, brain researcher. He works at the White House, and that is an awesome show. I was so motivated, I went out and bought two books, not one, but two books on the brain. One is Dr. Chevalier's book, and the other one is Dr. Amen, who has many Dr. Amen clinics all over the country. And I'm learning a lot about my brain, and it's very educational. I would recommend everybody do that. I did a Facebook Live talking about the book and the name of it. I think the name of it, Dr. Daniel Amen, is Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. So I highly recommend this stuff. All right, enough of that. A big welcome to my guest, Cheryl Duffy. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
I'm glad you joined us all the way from the other side of the world where there's volcanoes, and you're actually in the future, aren't you? You're a day ahead of us.
I am.
So how's the weather tomorrow? I'd like to know. And what did the stock market do tomorrow?
Well, here it's cold.
You know, I'm going to Hawaii. My wife and I'm speaking at 11 events over there in 25 days. So hopefully I'll have time to relax as well. And I just heard there's a hurricane approaching Hilo. Forgot the name of it, but it's a man's name. And so I don't know how that's going to affect Oahu. Hopefully it won't. I have a friend over there, and I asked him, and he took a picture, and it's just another beautiful day in paradise. So you just never know what's going to happen over there in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Well, yeah. I like to ask my new guests, Cheryl, why don't you take a minute or two, introduce yourself, and just who is Cheryl Duffy, and why was she put on this earth?
Well, my name's Cheryl Duffy. I'm a certified divorce coach and the author of The Divorce Tango. And I was put on this earth to help people to go through their divorce journey or struggling to let go of their old life and create a new life for themselves. So it takes me back 10 years ago when I had my divorce. That was when it all kicked off, and I went through a very dark time. And that's when I realized, when I came through that, that I don't want other people to waste 8 years of their life in not getting their life back on track. So I've made it my mission to help other people through divorce.
Wow, isn't that amazing? That's the same thing I said when I became Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. I says, you know, I don't want other caregivers to go through the pain and the suffering. I don't want them to give up like I almost gave up. And so, and that's the same thing Adrian did as well.
Yep.
So I think the number one cause of divorce is stress, right? It could be finances, it could be other things, but I think the number one cause is stress. And there's no greater stress than the stress of a caregiver. So it makes sense, even though suicide, there's a higher incidence of suicide with caregivers, there's a higher incidence of everything, you would think that there's probably a higher incidence of divorce with caregivers. Why don't you let
Absolutely.
us know what you know about stress on caregivers' marriages and how it increases the risk of divorce?
Well, I think with a caregiver, they become so consumed with caring for a loved one. That could be a parent, a disabled child, it can be anyone within the family unit, that their time gets so consumed with taking care of that person that it puts a big strain on their marriage. So the person that's in their partnership feels as though there isn't any time for them. They become resentful, and I see quite a few relationships where their marriage does get impacted by the caregiver having to spend so much time caring for a loved one. And the problem is that poor caregiver is needing all the support they can, and when their support network starts to move away from them or leave them because they're not having their needs fulfilled, then it puts more pressure on the caregiver because now they're on their own. They're now facing a divorce because they're needing to, look after the person, and that's consuming their life, and their marriage has fallen down.
I have heard so many people tell me that they got a divorce before their caregiving thing, and now the man, and sometimes the woman, who needs caregiving, there's no one else to do it. So the ex-spouse actually goes back, and they don't, they're not living as husband and wife, but apparently they had enough of a history together that, and enough compassion in their heart. That this ex, because we're
Wow.
supposed to hate our exes, right? That song,
Hate?
All My Exes Live in Texas.
We don't hate them. They
Some do. Some
exist.
do.
Some do, yeah. But we're not supposed to.
No, we're not supposed to do a lot of things. So have you heard that? That exes sometimes come back
No,
and.
I haven't heard of the ex coming back and doing the caregiving because, I think that would take a lot of, compassion, as you say, and kindness to put yourself back into that position,
It would take a lot of
where you
something,
once left.
especially a bad divorce, and a lot of divorces are bad. A lot of them are ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so now I've been happily married for 43 years. We've been together 44 years. So it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, there was a point during Charlene's grief period where she was treating me terribly and she was mean to me because there was no one else around. She couldn't talk. She'd lost her speech. And everything that she valued was being taken away from her car, her house, just her independence, her body. And so I can understand how, because I'm the caregiver's caregiver, and I almost left because you can only take so much. And all I didn't require much. I just wanted just a few little crumbs. And sometimes you don't even get the crumbs. But we'd like to know who we're talking to. So if you wouldn't mind being personal and sharing some of the details about your divorce. I mean, was caregiving an issue in why you got a divorce or no?
No. So it was just a case of my husband wanted to leave, and so basically, it was more growing apart, I suppose, that he didn't feel that, there was a future together any longer, and he wanted to move on. So
So he initiated it.
he initiated, yeah,
So how long
and
did you
so he.
grieve from that loss?
Well, I loved him for a good 5 years after he left. I was grieving for a very long time. It was probably the 6th year when I went to a recovery program myself and learned that I had my aha moment there in learning that I was actually pining for my old life, and that to be able to move forward, I needed to basically transition from being shackled to my old life. And I think I was shackled to my old life because I stayed in the family home after our divorce, And I stayed at the same company where my ex-husband worked.
Oh
So I
my,
was sort of
that's
one
tough.
foot in my old life and one foot out.
So you had to see
So
him every day
I was
during those
struggling.
5 years?
Pardon?
Did you like see him every day during those 5 years at
Yeah.
work?
A lot of
Oh
times,
boy.
yeah. It was very difficult.
Difficult.
But I had built up a career and felt I didn't want to have to give up my career there in this global company where I was achieving, great things in my career. So I did continue to stay there. But, I moved into an Asia Pacific role, which enabled me to work from home for the last sort of couple of years of that time frame. So that helped not having to go into the office. But because I was still living in my old life, I found it really hard to move on. And I certainly didn't want to date, so I didn't date for 6 years, because I just didn't want to get hurt again. So
So
I
you were
basically
just
just.
tortured for 5 or 6 years, huh?
Yeah, I was heartbroken. So I busied myself, threw myself into work, and I started doing a master's degree. And I think the thing that really crippled me was losing the kids 50% of the time. So not only did I lose my partner, which I didn't want to happen, but I also lost my kids 50% of the time, which I wasn't prepared to have that sort of loss of them as well.
How did the 50% work out? Were they every other week? They
Yeah,
you lived
so
close
1 week.
by?
Yeah, my ex-husband leased a place close by so they could go to the same school, and they didn't have too much change in, the friends that they had. And they had 1 week with me and 1 week with my ex-husband.
Oh my, how
Now,
did that work
because,
out?
well, it was,
For the
we made
kids, I
sure
mean,
that
was
they
it
had
hard on
everything
them?
they needed. It was, particularly on my son, I think, because he had ADHD, so he struggled being, organized, and he came back and just stayed with me after
He needed a
12 months.
caregiver.
And then he basically went to stay at his father's every second weekend then. So.
Wow. It's tough. You ever heard anything like that, Adrian?
Yep.
Where a child lives 1 week in one place and another week in the other?
Yeah,
Wow.
it's very, yeah,
Usually it's just
very
the
young.
dad gets him on weekends, and that's not
But
too bad.
he didn't move close enough for them to stay in the same school, so that part of it,
yeah,
But it still tortured
was good
her
for the
having to
kids,
not
yeah.
see the kids for 7 days, seven
Of
days on, seven
course.
days off. Wow.
Yeah.
So I am so sorry, but I can see how what was it that actually made you decide was I'm sure it had something to do with the support groups you were attending, but where you just said, you know what, enough is enough. I've been grieving long enough, and by golly, I'm going to do something. And after 6 years, I would imagine it would be very, very difficult to break that 6 year pattern of just, sulking or whatever it is you were doing, and to
Yes.
take positive, affirmative changes to get up, maybe get a new
Yeah.
hairdo, maybe go get a new wardrobe. I mean, I don't know. Tell us about that transition period for you and how it happened.
Well, with those 6 years, I basically plummeted into depression and I was comfort eating. So whenever I'm stressed, I reach for the chocolate. I still do it now.
Chocolate is your
So I was just
friend.
plowing on so much weight. Like I put on over 30 pounds. And so that just spiraled my self-loathing of myself. And it wasn't until I went to that recovery program where they were saying, what's holding you back? What are you scared of? Why are you scared of moving forward? Why are you not able to, transition and create a new life? And that's where I was realizing that I was still holding on to my old life. So when I realized that I needed to accept my old life was over, then I could start to make the decisions that needed to be made for me to be able to move on. So I basically said to myself, I need to move out of this house, I need to move out of this job, and I need to get onto a health regime and get my life sorted. So that's what I did. And I exercised 2 hours a day, dieting, and I lost in 12 months over 40 pounds. And as people
Wow, good for you.
recognized that, as people saw my transformation, they were sort of complimenting me and saying, "Wow, you're looking great." And that was, helping my self-esteem come back because they were basically seeing that I was coming alive again. Because to be honest with you, for those 6 years, I was just in a robotic state and just surviving life. I wasn't really participating in it and enjoying it. So it wasn't until I started to reinvent myself that I could then start to see the opportunities for the future to, have a better life for myself.
I have a question. Did you see the divorce coming at all, or did it come out of the blue completely? And did
Yeah, I did see it coming. Changed behaviors, and my husband would be staying up late at night drinking, and I'd be, "Are you coming to bed?" And he'd be, "No, I'm just staying up watching some more TV." And this has gone midnight, and this was going on for quite some time. And in hindsight, he must have been struggling with his decision on whether to stay or go. And because the communication wasn't open on, feeling that, he didn't want to be in it anymore, or he wasn't happy. We weren't communicating to be able to see how it could be fixed. So, and I think, it contributed that I was a bit of a workaholic. I got a lot of self-achievement out of my work. So maybe he felt a bit of resentment of not having, the attention that I could have provided him. There's a lot of aspects, but if you don't have the communication in place to talk about how you're actually feeling, it makes it very, very hard to improve things. So the problem being is if you don't communicate, then it becomes quite a shock when they do say eventually that they're going to leave. And it's very hard for the person being left because you sort of blindsided and feel, "Oh my gosh, I didn't expect it to happen like this. Like, can't we work through it?" But he had decided he was going to go, and that's what happened. So it was a very, very tough time.
Do you have open channels of communication now?
No, because the kids are grown up now. Basically, when they were going between the two houses, then when the kids weren't driving, because the kids were 12 and 15 when he left, we'd have to ferry them around. So I'd drop them off or he'd drop them off. And like, we were very civil in making sure that, joint money was put into a kitty so that if the kids needed anything, we were
Kids.
both, making sure all their needs were met. So that was fine. There was no financial impact, which was good. So it was just basically having that communication throughout the time when the children became of age, where they used to then drive themselves over to their father's, and I didn't really need to have any contact then. I'm a bit of a person that an ex is an ex, and they sort of, I close that chapter, so to speak. I don't really, like, you do it for the children, but when you don't have to do it for the children anymore, there's not really any need to be in contact.
Yeah, I mean, I know I told my late husband, if we ever break up, that's it. There's no going back. That's it. But my first husband and I are on very civil terms now. He lives in Switzerland. I live in New York City, and maybe that has something to do with it.
Did you
No, that's
say
good.
your current husband, Adrian?
My ex. I
I
have
thought
no current.
she got married and she didn't invite me to the wedding. She's currently
Oh,
seeing someone.
yes, I'm seeing
that's
someone.
good.
And you never know
That's
where that
good.
may lead.
No, that might be
Right.
marriage number three.
Silence, crickets. Listen, let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll talk about how caregiving got into this equation. So don't go away.
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book,
entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. Will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver, on sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com.
And we're back with Cheryl, kind of rolls off the tongue, Cheryl Duffy and Adrian Gruber. And we're talking about her book, The Divorce Tango. And so far, we were talking about the divorce. So when did caregiving get into the equation? Because now you have – is this book for anybody or for caregivers in general or for also for caregivers?
It's for anybody who's going through divorce. Okay, so that can be caregivers. That can be, you know, people who are – That's married great. And just going through separation. So it's for everybody.
Well, and there's a lot of divorced people and a lot of people going through a divorce. One of my workers been married quite a long time, over 20 years or so, got four kids, and they're getting a divorce, and it's not pretty. And everybody knows somebody right now who's going through the divorce. And have you ever heard of a divorce that wasn't messy and wasn't ugly, Adrian? There might be some out there. I don't know.
There
but
are
I haven't
some
seen
out
any.
There. Yeah. There yeah. are some out there that are mutual. Yeah.
Are you a caregiver today, Cheryl?
No, my mother is, and she's looking after my brother-in-law and also my sister, who's mentally disabled.
Oh, so how's she doing?
My mother?
As far as handling the stress and the caregiving, is she still married?
Well, my father died last November.
Mm.
So she's
that.
Been under a lot of strain with the grief of she was looking after him as he deteriorated.
Mm-hmm.
And then simultaneously, my brother-in-law, his ailments became more demanding on needing to see specialists. And she was sort of being pulled between the two in being able to look after both of them. And, you know, I know with my mum, I've just, you know, been trying to help her as much as I can. But the problem is she feels a great sense of responsibility that it's her responsibility to look after them. And I've said, look, I can come and stay. What? So you can go away to your friend's place and get a rest. Or come and stay at my place, but she's very much, oh no, I don't want to leave, you know, just in case something happens. So it's very difficult for the caregiver to be kind to themselves, to give themselves the break that they need to, you know, re-energize basically, because they do need the strength to keep on doing the work that they do.
Yeah, I do this little shtick with my cell phone. I said, you know, the second biggest mistake that caregivers make, the first being is that they don't know how to put their needs first. The second is they don't know how to ask for help. I says, everyone has a cell phone.
Yes.
Pick it up, turn it on, dial a number. Hello, Mom, I need help. Grandma's driving me crazy. You know, call your brother, call your sister, call your mother's ex-wife, call
yes.
anybody, but get over that silly notion that if you can't do it all by yourself, you're a failure as a caregiver. That attitude will kill her, and this is what she needs to understand.
Yes.
I mean, I'm the caregiver's yes. caregiver, and in February, I cut my finger off, well, to the bone anyway. They were able to save it because I was doing something with a skill saw, and I know how to use a skill saw. But when you have a flimsy piece of molding, someone should be holding the other end so that it's not going to go like this and gets away from you. And I don't know why I didn't ask for help, probably because I don't like to ask for help. I don't want to be indebted to someone. I don't want to inconvenience them. I don't want them to think that I can't do this by myself. And that's what goes through the caregiver's mind. So you've got to break your mother of this habit or it's going to kill her. So
yeah,
let her read my book. Where's my book? Oh. Hold on. Well, it's here. It's here somewhere.
I need to write a book. Why I'm not writing a book.
That would be a great book, Adrian. All right. I found my book. There it is. So she needs to read my book.
Excellent.
It's My Life Too, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no.
And
go ahead.
Caregivers have a very hard time setting boundaries, especially when they're with somebody who's convinced them that they're the only one that can take care of them.
So you need to do with your mother, you need to go in there and not ask. You just need to make statements. Mom, I'm helping you because I have learned that caregivers hate to ask for help, and you are no exception. And so I'm not even going to ask you if you want my help. I'm just going to help you, and I will not take no for an answer. And you need to learn how to say yes and learn how to say no. And here you need to read this book. And by the way, you need to join a support group. The Caregiver Space or Caregiver Dave, both of them would be very good groups for them to join. Heck, you should join both of them. And you need to be actively involved. I mean, if you love your mother, I'm sure you do. If you want her to stay alive and stay around for a long time, I'm sure you do. Then you must do this. Because she is as helpless as you were during your 5 or 6 years of grief. You know, you couldn't function. Well,
and
maybe
she's
functioning
in grief.
She's still in grief.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I always like to abbreviate the time in grief because how much grief is enough? You know, I got in trouble telling this girl after she was grieving after 5 years when her fiance dropped dead that, you know, maybe it's time enough, maybe you need to move on. And she just cut off my head and says, listen, everyone grieves in their own time. I'm not done grieving yet. Said, okay.
And it's so true.
But
there isn't a defined time, and you can't even try to help people move on. They have to do it in their own time.
Right.
They have to come to the realization it's not serving them anymore and that they need to move on. But if they're not ready, doesn't matter how much you say.
Yeah, they're just denying themselves of the happy opportunities that could be knocking at their door, but nobody's home.
Yeah. Exactly.
So now I just got my dog barking because he heard the knocking. He's such a good watchdog. Quiet. Let's talk about...
My daughter used to say exactly the same thing to me, that after 6 years, she said, you know, you need to get out there and meet people, Mom. She said, they're not going to come knocking on the front door. You know, you're not going to meet a new man like that. He's not going to just appear out of nowhere and come and find you. You've got to get out there and participate in life and enjoy yourself.
Yes. Adrian, did you want to say something?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. So we talked about grief and the devastating effects it has on us. And obviously your mother is in grief. Was there any anticipatory grief? I like that word. Where... Before your father died, she kind of knew it was coming, and she didn't even wait for him to die. She started worrying about him dying before he died. Did any of that happen?
I think we were very worried for my father. We were in a situation where he was not going to leave the hospital to come home, and all he was wanting was to come home. And we both knew, Mum and I, that Mum wouldn't be able to look after him and he'd have to go into an aged care facility. Mum looked after him for a fair amount of time, but the problem is he got to a stage where he needed 24/7 support. So my mum was struggling with my dad saying he wanted to come home, and she was very worried that, you know, she wouldn't be able to take care of him. So we both felt it was a blessing when he did go in the hospital when he died, because he would have absolutely hated going to an old age facility and not being with my mum. All he wanted to be was with my mum the whole time. So It was a blessing that he went.
So does she have this attitude that it was a blessing, that, oh, he's not suffering
yeah.
anymore, oh, I'm free? That should be happening.
She never says, oh, I'm free. She never says that. But she says it's a blessing that he's not suffering anymore.
Now
and
it's
how
her
much
turn
he
to
would
suffer.
Have hated it. Well, yeah.
Adrian, you run
she
the
misses him
the
terribly.
You run the aftercare group on the caregiver space. Give us some insight.
Well, Bob Harrison runs it actually, but it's a really good group for grieving caregivers, learning to communicate with other people again, not just have their lives involved with one person. I mean, I took
because
care of two
sometimes the romance
people.
Can happen when you least expect it. You have to just open yourself up.
Yeah, but that group is there like for as long as you need it. Mm-hmm. And then you can move on to something else, sort of. There are a lot of newly bereaved.
So do some of them wait 5 or 6 years like Cheryl did?
Absolutely. Mm. I didn't. But I never set a time limit for myself. I never said, you know, it's not the right thing to do yet. I mean, I was on Match.com 4 days after Steve died, not because I was looking to meet someone, but just because I wanted to laugh.
Maybe that's what your subconscious told you.
No, I think that's what I meant, because, I mean, I've said it many times. When a man takes a picture of himself in front of the Great Pyramids, and he's this big, and the pyramid is this big, you know, that's funny. So, but I mean, I pre-grieved, and my anticipatory grief was real, and Steve had anticipatory grief because he really didn't want to leave me. So it worked both ways. Of course, I was the one that was left, and I had to clean up the mess. But
so, Cheryl, would you say that your mother went from one carer to another as soon as your father died? All of a sudden, she just focused her attention on her daughter?
Yes, on the son-in-law, who she feels is like a son. So once Dad died, I think, you know, she threw herself into caring for him, probably more than he, like, not that more than he needed, but, you know, she just consumed herself with taking care of Shane and you know, taking him to all of the specialist appointments and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I think she just continued that role from Dad going to taking care of Shane as well. So
I'm a little confused. I'm sorry. I'm a little confused because you did say son at the beginning when you were talking about him, but then I was reading this question and it talked about a mentally challenged sister growing up.
Yeah.
So we're talking about two mentally challenged people?
Yes, they're married. So it's her son-in-law. She's caring for.
Sorry, I missed
and
that
my sister.
Little word. In-law.
So, yeah, it's my sister that's mentally challenged, and so Mum had to take care of her, like, throughout her life. Mm. But that's what she's very thankful to my father, that, you know, he stood by and helped her, whereas I remember a lot of the birthday parties for my sister that so many of the kids that used to come to the party, the fathers had left. Because it was too much of a burden for them. And it was such a impact on the marriage because the wife was having to take care of the child and you know, they obviously felt that they weren't, you know, they weren't getting the attention that they needed, their needs weren't being
Mm-hmm.
met. So, whenever someone is that caregiver, their life becomes so consumed.
Do you counsel that kind of woman frequently, or?
Only if they're going through a divorce. So I tend to work
No,
closely
I'm.
with people who are going through divorce.
Yeah, but I mean, do you find that there are many caregivers who will come to you because they're getting divorced?
They come for advice on the divorce process, yes.
Okay.
So the divorce process fits everybody. So yes, there are people who are caregivers, and other people
I'm sure.
that come to me as well.
Do
Do
you
you find
find
that
that more men leave than women in that situation?
Oh, absolutely. So particularly in the space of if there's a disabled child, it is
Right.
mainly the man that
Right.
leaves. The mother has sort of this sort of, maternal bond, this sense of responsibility
Right.
that, she can't leave. She needs to be the one that takes care of the child. But it impacts, the siblings as well. Like I've seen so many mothers who their grown-up children, they have estranged relationships with them because the sibling was so resentful that the mother had to spend so much time and attention on the disabled child. And like my mum comments quite often, oh, I've met another lady who her grown-up child hasn't spoken to her for years. And so my mum gets a real big realization of, the impact and talks to me about, how I felt when I was growing up. Like I've got a great relationship. We're a very, very close family. But there are some families that, have been impacted and split because the mother has had to care for a disabled child. So it's very sad.
So I'm curious about how the sister met her husband.
Well, my sister's always worked at a sheltered workshop. Do you know what a sheltered workshop is?
I don't think so.
It's a facility where people with disabilities can work at, where it's usually packing things like tablets into bottles or, 20 or 30 screws into a little packet. So it's
Yeah,
like a
the American
packaging
dis
company.
disabled vets, I think, kind of do that as well. So they met.
Okay.
And
Yes.
so was it good for her?
Oh, absolutely. But my parents copped a lot of flak in allowing her to get married. This is
Oh, yeah.
going back like, 30 odd years ago, and people were, oh, surely you're not going to allow them to get married. Like a lot of people that do have disabled children, they don't have them get married. They stay living at home for the rest of their lives with a parent, generally the mother. But in my parents' situation, they felt they always tried to have my daughter become independent. And because they
Yeah.
fell in love,
They
then my
deserve some
parents were very
happiness.
supportive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
But we've
great.
always been there for them and helped them. So,
Yeah,
it's
I
been
also
great for the
have
system.
a mentally disabled cousin, and she was 45, and she met someone who was disabled, and they started dating, and they didn't actually marry, but they might have. Unfortunately, she had a seizure, and he found her in the bathroom, and so at the funeral he was just so torn up, and I felt
Oh,
so
that's
sorry
so
for him.
sad.
And his parents were very supportive. In fact, they let them both live in their house because
Oh, that's nice.
she's been out on her own, but she was always like getting into problems, and she needed somebody to watch over her. And so it was a great arrangement, and it was just a sad, sad day to see her go. And he's just heartbroken and torn up. And I hope he finds someone else. But
That's sad.
I'm interested in this title, The Divorce Tango. I'm reading the back cover, and I'm saying, surely I can figure out why she calls this The Divorce Tango. Tell us what you were thinking.
It was just sort of like the emotional sort of you're tugged this way and that way when you're going through a divorce, and it just was likened to this sort of passionate dance where you sort of, pushed around the dance floor. And you do feel like that. You feel like you're just
There's
being,
no dance like the tango.
Forced in different directions. Pardon?
There's no dance like the tango.
No.
Sometimes you have to bite
and
a
with the
rose.
Help of the publisher.
Sometimes you have to bite a rose that has some thorns in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So education, awareness should be provided to those being cared for about the needs of the carer and to have time out so they can be happier and healthier instead of duty bound and resentful. Do you see people who need care and they kind of rely on that 24/7 attention by their care without giving consideration to the need of the care receiver?
Yeah, I've seen it with my father and some of my parents, friends, where, the sibling, the partner is needing the care, but they're very demanding in wanting their partner to be there 24/7. And I just see with my sister and her husband, they have like a disability social group they go to, which gives my mum some respite so that when they go to their disco, their dance, they do have trips away each year. And it just gives mum a break. So I think for all sort of caregiving environments, if there's some opportunity to have social groups set up where other people who are having a carer, they can all go to these social events and make friendships and then possibly have some form of, time away on holidays with that group of friends, just gives a break to the carer so they get a bit of respite as well.
Awesome. Listen, we're going to take another break, talking about breaks. So don't go away. We will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available everywhere.
We're back with Adrian Gruberg and our guest, Carol Duffy, author of The Divorce Tango. Well, Dorian, we're in the last final stretch. It goes fast, doesn't it?
It's amazing.
So let's talk about the different ways respite. Whenever we talk about respite to our caregivers that we both, I've got about 35,000 that are following me. Adrian, though, she's the queen. She has like 160,000
following
her. The queen. The queen. So how can we get these caregivers to take advantage of the many respite opportunities? Many of them are free. And, I think of like senior centers offer lots of services. What is your take on respite and what could be done to get more caregivers involved in respite so that they don't get a divorce, so that their marriage remains happy? Then after that, I'll have you talk about some of the things that if you're still married and you suspect that things are cooling off, what you can do to reignite the flame so that you never become a divorce statistic.
Okay, so shall we start with the respite first?
We shall.
Okay, so with the respite, I feel there needs to be more education and awareness to the person being cared for to sort of break that sort of dependence and reliance on the carer being there so often. been there 24/7. Because I think carers would accept respite more if they didn't feel that sort of urgent need from the person being cared for, wanting them to be there all the time. So I think if we can educate the person that receives the care, that in, to enable the person that's caring for them to be happier and healthier and stronger, then they need to be able to, you know, go to some of these respite facilities where they're going to give their carer a break, but also meet other people. It's a social outlet for them because the person being cared for only has this one person, this carer, that's sort of consumed in their life. So it gives them an opportunity to make more friends by going to some of these social groups and some of these respite centres, and therefore, you know, be able to give the break to the carer.
Were you ever invited or encouraged to go during your 5-year, 6-year grief period? And if so, what was your response?
No, I didn't feel there was anything for people who were going through depression and going through divorce. There are Facebook divorce groups, and the recovery program I went to was a local church that was running it. And that was the only thing that I could find for support, and obviously your friends. But I didn't see there were many things for people going through depression. It was more, respite was more for people with major sort of physical disabilities, where the carer is physically worn out and mentally worn out, needing that respite. But for people just going through depression, and I don't mean just as in it's flippantly, but there just aren't the you know, the facilities available for people with depression to be helped in that sense. That, well, I don't feel anyway.
In Australia, I'm not familiar enough with the healthcare system. I'm not familiar at all with the healthcare system in Australia. What kind of support would they have for you, the social workers, and or are you on your own?
Well, you've got your GP, and then you can go to a psychologist. You can be referred to a psychologist that helps you. You can be on like a mental health plan, and the government helps fund that, so that you can then go and see a psychologist that helps you with the techniques of being able to move forward and get over the pain of the divorce. But as in sort of other groups, there isn't sort of any other sort of areas except on Facebook social groups where people who have been through similar situations put up, like start to build these communities where you can support each other. Which is really good. And I've joined a lot of those later, like now, to try and help other people going through divorce.
Do they have meetups?
They just feel so helpless.
Do they have meetups in Australia?
Yes. Yes. So you basically have meetups for all different types of, like you could do different recreational activities where people have similar interests, but we also have like professional ones as well. So I used to run one in my local community, and a lot of those people are divorced. So meetups are not like a singles event. It's very much meet new friends, create new friends, like-minded people, people that may have been through a similar situation that you have, and it gives them an opportunity to make new friends. So they're really good.
Yeah, when you have the opportunity to when you're ready to create a new life, it's a good way to start.
But you do have to be ready. I had so many people when I was going through depression about losing the kids, they would say, oh, just think you've got, you know, 50% of your time just for me time, just for you, you know, go out and do whatever you would like to do. And like, I was so obsessed with being so upset about losing the kids, I couldn't even think about even wanting to participate in something other than, you know, wanting to have my children. You get into this mental state where it can be quite deliberating in making you feel that that's all you're wanting, and it sort of overpowers you.
Can we talk about depression now? Because this is a hot topic. You know, it's, I found out that AARP and the United Hospital Fund did a joint study on 1,677 caregivers, found that roughly half of them in different stages felt down, depressed, and hopeless just within 2 weeks of the study. So, I mean, with all the recent suicides in the news lately, you know, Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, and a little further back, Robin Williams, Kurt Cobain, you know, whenever there's depression, we must always ask, is suicide far behind? So how depressed were you? Were you just sad, or were you clinically depressed? Were you on antidepressants? Were you suicidal? I mean, how bad did it get?
I was put onto antidepressants because, like, for 3 weeks I was on the lounge. I don't know what you guys call it, a sofa, a couch. I couldn't get up. I was crying all the time. And this is coming from a person who was a workaholic, who always had their life in control. And I just felt that I had no control any longer, and I was just couldn't even get up to make anything to eat. As I say, crying all the time. So I was put on antidepressants. And then antidepressants then make you very robotic. So you become quite numb emotionally. And that's what they're supposed to do, is to try and let you be able to function in life without having that emotional overload. So, you know, I would feel I could go and see a comedy movie, not laugh. I could see a movie that was sad, not cry. I was just this numb robot that was just, you know, surviving life, really.
Was that better than depression?
It was better than not being able to function, because you've got to go out to work. You've got to look after the kids when they're there. You've got to be able to function. And if you can't, if you don't have the capability to do that, then I think antidepressants are good. It does have the side effect of putting on weight, and that didn't help depression, because then, as I said before, with the comfort eating and antidepressants also make you lose, put on weight. So that sort of just spirals you further into being depressed when you're getting fatter and fatter. So it's, you know, it's a catch-22, isn't it? You've got to be able to get up off the couch, go to work, function as a normal human being, but then it has the, you know, the side effects of, okay, well, you know, you're going to look different, feel different, so it's very difficult.
Well, I'm going to interject here for a second, because I've been on antidepressants for 35 years now, and I don't think anybody looking at me would know outwardly that I was on any medication. But yes, it took a while to find what they call the right cocktail. There were times when I was a bit of a zombie and I needed somebody to tell me that. But you can find the right combination of medications to be able to function well.
But there are two different types of people as well. Like, I have a friend, whenever she's stressed, the weight just falls off her. When I'm stressed, the weight just loads on me, because I, you know, reach for the comfort food. So it's part of your emotional makeup of what type of person you are under stress, and also your body type. Like, if you've been, you know, a slim person and that's your build, then, you know, it's hard for those people to put weight on.
Adrian doesn't know how to gain weight.
Adrian has weighed over 200 pounds.
No way.
Because Adrian has no thyroid. So that's also part of why Adrian is clinically
I would love
depressed.
To see a picture of that 200-pound Adrian, because I can't even imagine it.
I'll bring it
next week.
I'm sure she's burnt all those photos.
I have not.
Cheryl, are you
you
still...
need them to remind yourself.
Cheryl, are you still on antidepressants? after you reinvented yourself, and it seems like you
No,
have this healthy
I came
attitude.
off them. Yeah.
Okay.
I was on them for probably 4 or 5 years, and then I came off them.
So maybe that wouldn't be defined. I mean, I'm not a doctor, as clinical depression. Maybe you were just, you know, going through a very sad time in your life and you needed help. What do you think, Adrian?
There are times when depression is appropriate. It really depends on how long it goes on, and
Or if
sometimes you
there's
put
even
on an
anything to be depressed about. Some people are depressed and there's nothing to be depressed about, like Anthony Bourdain. What the heck did he have to be depressed about?
Who said he was depressed?
I just assume when someone
You're
takes their life.
assuming.
Well, tell me, educate me.
Well, you don't know. I mean, there could
Does
have been
anybody
all
know?
sorts of factors in his life. I don't know.
We
But there could
heard
have been all
Robin
these
Williams
factors
dealt
in
with
his life.
depression.
Robin Williams dealt with depression. He was probably manic depressive, but and had a cycle of like 2 minutes. But
I read a lot on Anthony, but I could have sworn I read something that said he suffered from depression, but I can't remember. I can't be 100%.
I don't know. I don't know that. I just know, you know, with somebody like Robin Williams, if it's true that he found out that he had something like Parkinson's, somebody like Robin could easily have said, I can't do this.
And I always talk about, you know, when you get that death sentence and the quality of life is going to go down, you know, I'm all for saying, okay, where do I sign the form that I do not want to end up like, you know, my mother, for example, who was, you know, she didn't remember anything. She wanted to leave this place. She says, why is God leaving me here? Definitely. And so she had, all we can do is fill out an advance directive and say, do not resuscitate, and all of that stuff.
Do you have that in Australia, advance directives and things
we
like
do,
that?
But it doesn't help when, you know, my grandmother, she had Alzheimer's, and her last 10 years of her life, she was just like a vegetable in the bed, not able to walk, talk, feed herself.
Had no health issues.
So that was...
Yeah.
No health issues for her for something that would kill her. So
you know,
she lived till she was 96.
Yep.
Sometimes they forget how to eat, how to swallow, and then they would
right.
need a feeding
yes.
tube, and then that's your out right there.
Yeah.
Well,
yes.
listen, well, the hour is up. It went so fast. How can someone get a hold of you, Cheryl, if they want to buy the book, or if they just want to talk to you, or they want to invite you on their show, and or they want to put you on the Tonight Show, or whatever they want to do?
Yep, they can go to my website, www.thedivorcetango.com, or they can email me at thedivorcetango@gmail.com.
And Adrian, how do we get
and
a hold of you?
I would love to.
It's Adrian, Adrienne, at thecaregiverspace.org. And thecaregiverspace.org is the website. And the Caregiver Space is the Facebook page. So,
and all you have
it's
to remember
all
about me is I'm Caregiver Dave, because I'm a caregiver and I'm Dave. CaregiverDave.com.
D-A-V-E.
CaregiverDave.com. Send, if you're not a caregiver, then go send a caregiver that you know and love to CaregiverDave.com. You just might be saving their life. And we have a gift for them that will help them relieve stress and anxiety and CaregiverDave.com. Thank you so much, both of you. I appreciate you coming on the show. We'll see everybody next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani.